to Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host behind the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Red Powell.
Hello.
Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
And Ricky Addington.
Is this thing working?
No. It is. FTN's very own Duncan Rhodes, Mr. Ricky Addington.
Yeah, right.
Brown on swords.
Yeah, you were brown just giving us a paint tip.
Brown on swords. Yeah, I just learned that today. If you're going to paint some like flaming, fiery swords of doom, if you just stipple a tiny little bit of brown on the edges and then on the inside of it, down the sword, it makes it look kind of like the lava is turning back into stone or whatever, or like the metal's cooling off there. So it's like not an even heat. And it just gives a little something extra. I didn't know that. I learned that today. Thanks, YouTube.
No, I think that seems to go really well with Salamander's Librarians, and you happen to be painting a Salamander's Librarian.
Well, yeah, they're my successor chapter for my Crusade force, and since every psychic power he has some sort of flame or fire in the title, he's getting a flaming, fiery sword.
Doesn't everyone love how all the Space Marine chapters, the one thing they're known about is the only thing they're allowed to be called? Like, Space Wolves. Everyone has to be Canis or Wolfie Wolfington or Sir, yeah. Sir Wolfsalot. And then Dark Angels is everybody's angsty and moody, Moody McMoody face,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera.
That's
Salamanders is Wizardy Fireball Boy.
They go a little too hard on a theme every now and then, I think. The only one that ever the only one that ever really bothered me, I think, was Space Wolves.
Yeah, like Space Wolves are the wolfiest of the wolfers.
It puts me off how wolfy and Space Wolves are.
I've never liked 40K Space Wolves, but Horus Heresy Space Wolves, you know, I felt like that was cool. That's a Space Wolf like I could get behind. I could get behind the chapter there. They're aggressive and kind of almost uncontrollable.
Hypocritical.
Yeah.
Look,
but
I know how this is all shaken out. And I can tell you this by the way my phone behaves. I mean, y'all know, have heard me talk about before, that every time I type anything that starts with a BA, it automatically capitalizes it and thinks I'm talking about Blood Angels.
Yeah.
So if I say I'll be right back, or when I told you guys that I'm back, I'm ready to record, and it capitalized the whole word back, the phone was trying to tell you I'm thinking about Blood Angels.
Mephiston? B-A, you saying Mephiston?
That's right. And so you got to think that Crusade Space Wolves, you know, they've had 30,000 years of autocorrecting to wolf, ice, murder, and they finally have just given up. And so...
That could be it. Yeah, they're just like, you know what, guys? Let's just embrace it. Let's just go with it.
So now when the servitor's trying to type in the mark, you know, 17 dreadnought, it's just like, you know, whatever. It's a wolf, iron fang, murder fist.
Mm.
I think they've got a dart board, and they just throw darts at it. Every time they come up with something new, they just throw a couple of darts, see where it lands, and that's it.
It's the manatees off the South Park. You know, they got the manatees making up the Family Guy jokes. And it's just like, bring the manatees to the Space Wolf tank, and there's a tank with just canine wolf dog references, and then there's one with Viking references, and then you're like, Alsatian-y Bruce, new Space Wolf character, genius!
Someone suggested we talk about Space Wolves. I don't think this is what they had in mind.
That's totally what they had in mind, man. Like, this is the quality content people need.
Oh, man. Thanks for participating in the comment section on YouTube. It's been quite lively with the last episodes, the last several episodes, and we have gotten some great suggestions for content. We're recording this preview. We heard that we've got Shadow, Iron, and Broken Realms preview coming up this weekend, and we're doing this recording before that, and then we'll record the second half of the show after that. So some surprise reactions. I don't know if there's any predictions. I think it's a no-brainer we're going to see some more of the Necron stuff.
With so many things they've still got to show us, I think it's pretty, like you said, no-brainer. We're going to get a couple of new stuff there.
In that you know, Battlescape montage picker or whatever, there's still some things in there that we haven't seen any close-up shots of. At least one. I think I saw at least one thing in there we haven't seen any info on.
Well, Red's the Necron man. What do you think it is? If it is Necrons.
Well, so last time we saw, the Monolith?
And Void Dragon. Or was that even earlier, the Void Dragon?
So the Void Dragon was earlier, but yeah, this last time between the Monolith, I think... things that we still need to see, so there's arguably there's been some stuff in the background that people have been like, hey, what's this? Like, it wasn't even pointed out before. And so we're interested to see if maybe they're doing new flayed ones. Like, that's my stab in the dark.
There looked like there was a new, like, maybe lieutenant or sergeant level sculpt of something that was creeping around.
Yeah, yeah. There's something out there that we're interested to see. And, you know, so there's been a few of the, you know, I think we mentioned it somewhat last time, but, you know, that article, they released the new weapons for the Space Marines and then some of the new weapons for the Necrons. And if you haven't seen it, you know, there's here or there, there's a couple pictures of the weapon profiles that are kind of leaking out throughout the internet. Mm. But we haven't seen anything necessarily like new as far as models go for the Necrons otherwise. So I'm really excited to see what, if at all, they've got maybe more hidden up their sleeves for the Necrons.
Did you allude to them tagging this with some kind of keywords, as in there was, like you said, Shadow and Iron or something?
Yeah, Shadow, Iron, and Broken Realms is the subtitle of the preview.
Well, Broken Realms would make you think that was a Age of Sigmar release.
Yeah, this is yes. Going to have a bunch of stuff. They've actually listed Necromunda, Underworlds, 40K, Warcry, Horus Heresy, and Age of Sigmar.
Oh, jeez. This is going to be huge then.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. And I'm kind of hoping, I got to admit, to slightly change gears real quick, but the Age of Sigmar stuff, I mean, I was a big Dark Elf fan in fantasy. And so it's, you know, we just had the Lumineth and essentially the Light Elves. And so I'm kind of hoping somewhere in there, maybe we're looking at an upcoming Dark Elf release. But that may be asking for too much right now.
Mal Erketh. And bring back, what's it, called Blade? Malice.
Yeah, Malice Darkblade is, you know,
one of the coolest.
Yeah. I mean, we talked to Dan Abnett, right? So, like, yeah, the Malice Darkblade he's one of the best anti-heroes that I've read that I've enjoyed going back to. And so it was great to see him in the End Times for what he showed up for. And it's great to see him in the Total War game, Total War 2 Warhammer. If you get to play that, I was so glad to see that he was in that. And so they don't call the big boss man Malekith anymore. He's Malarian. And so I'm interested to see what that, but anyways.
Well, he essentially was the elf savior. Like Teclis was, do something else. And Malekith was like, I've been a light elf the whole time.
Right? Yeah. I really like the End Times as far as the Eldar or the elves went. I mean, with Malekith, he's like, hey, I'm the Darth Vader savior that you've actually wanted the entire time, because Tyrion is a bad, bad dude. And Teclis was like, well, I guess I can't disagree with you there. It's like a reversal on the King Arthur story. It was kind of crazy. It was cool to watch go down. But anyways, I'm really interested to see what comes out of that. I'm pretty hyped, and some more Necron stuff would definitely be the icing on the cake for that.
Yeah, the End Times were somewhat divisive. I mean,
nobody wanted that party to end. Let's be real.
Nah.
Yeah, and then with the way they released some books, there was like some stories that like characters that were destroyed like came back to life first. I mean, I think there was some bumps along the way, but I think overall the story was like really, really pretty cool. I mean, with the Skaven launching themselves back into space, with the realms disintegrating around everyone.
Blew up the moon, mate. They blew up the friggin' moon, because they were like, they Wallace and Gromit'd that moon. They're like, that thing's made of cheese.
I mean, again, I think for the epicness of it, it captured that real epicness. It was the perfect thing to launch into Age of Sigmar, and then Age of Sigmar stumbled. And since that has been corrected, I've gotten over it. I mean, I'll just say that I've gotten over it, and now I can enjoy the End Time story for what it was, and then now enjoy Age of Sigmar for what it is.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. It took me a long time. I was a very competitive Warhammer Fantasy player. And the only reason you're talking to me here now is because End Times happened in 40K, so in Fantasy. Otherwise, I'd still be playing Fantasy. I loved that world. I loved that everything about it. And I had about 15,000 points of painted Ogre Kingdoms, which was my army. I had every single model in the entire range painted up to a standard I was really happy with. And it took me, I think it was three years after Fantasy died, and I tried to play Age of Sigmar for a year, and then I decided it wasn't for me and changed to 40K. And it took me 3 years after that before I was ready to let go of that army and sell those Ogre Kingdoms. And you know what? Still regret it.
Because guess what? They're back, and they're just as awesome.
I know. It's cool.
I feel you. I honestly, I did. So I had undead and dark elves and ogres, and I sold my ogres. So I know your pain to the depths.
I recently was talking with someone, and they mentioned that when Ogre Kingdoms first hit, I promise I'm going to loop this back into 40K in about 10 seconds. I promise.
Well, not 40K, Blood Angels. We all know what's going on.
But they... mentioned that they thought that Ogre Kingdoms, when they launched, were like a grand experiment of, can you make this elite four wound, I think they had four wounds or something at the time, thing playable and have it not be too over the top. And they were telling the story in reference to like what Custodes are now, and how the increased wounds of Space Marines, we don't know like who's going to get what, if everyone's going to get it, is just the basic troopers or are Green Knight Paladins going to come through. We don't know that, but they were talking about how the Ogre Kingdoms actually had a real like concept link to what Custodes are and how they fit into 40K.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, playing against both have me off to no end. So yeah, that sounds about right.
Well, they're not a giant, they're not a knight, you know, they're not a dreadnought or whatever. They're this, you know, they're very much there in the middle, in between what a basic trooper is, and then say that next elite thing up, the dreadnought. You know, they're right there in the middle, with number of wounds, durability, and that kind of stuff, and then how they play, and then how do you make that functional and good in the context of everything else. I thought it was interesting to at least kind of exercise the mind around, oh, yeah, you're right. When Ogre Kingdoms first came out, their magic was different. They had smaller unit sizes. They were hit like freight trains and had a big thing of wounds. And it took them a while. It took GW a while to dial them into, I think, to something formidable.
Yeah, I remember. So I started playing them. I got a little in after the heyday for ogres. I picked them up just because I like the models. I picked up demons when I first started fantasy, but then the Matt Ward codex came out and no one wanted to play me anymore because demons were crazy. And they were at an unfun level of strength. So I dropped them for the ogres, and the ogres were in like, they were just kind of starting to be on the decline. Like the Mournfang had come out and been that first level of monstrous cavalry that really dominated the game quite a lot. And I caught him.
The bits on those kits are phenomenal.
That is literally why I got into it. I cracked open a Stonehorn, and I was just like, this is the best model I've ever owned. This is the best kit I've ever had. It's got the most bits in it. It's got the most everything. It looks cool. It's multi-part. I mean, sorry, it's multi-build. You can have the Stonehorn, or you can have the Thunder Tusk. I just loved it. I was just like, oh, this is incredible. And from then I was hooked.
I've never owned a Stonehorn or a whatever that thing is, the Thunderhoof thing you just talked about. But I'm willing to bet that I probably have those kits in bits on several other armies that I own.
Yeah.
Could probably go and find enough bits to at least form one of those configurations just off of things that I've scavenged or bought third party or whatever. Phenomenal kit. I know we went off on a little bit of a tangent, but we got a lot of that. We're all salivating. Like Warcry, still an amazing game. Horus Heresy has not gotten a lot of love recently, and almost been kind of overshadowed by, you know, basically a lot the ninth edition of 40K.
On top of that, I think COVID messed with the Forge World production team a lot more than it messed with the GW production side of things. So I think that could be a big reason why Forge World has been a bit more behind the eight ball than GW. Cool.
If you got five people that in your department and one of them gets sick, you know, you're down more.
Or if it's just, you know, just halt operations because no one can come into the factory or whatever for a while. But I think recently it was either Forge World or Horus Heresy launched like an official Facebook page.
Yeah. So the Forge World Facebook page is now the Horus Heresy Facebook page. And they're going to be creating ones exclusively for each of their game systems. So you can expect there to be like an Aeronautica Facebook page and Necromunda ones and all sorts. But so I think that's good. I think they're diversifying out a little bit so people can get in touch with the things that they want to put their time and money into and just get the information that's direct for them rather than having to sift through anything else.
Well, sorry, if we're talking like predictions of what may come out. Now, look, this is going to be shattered by the time someone hears this. So, look, we know we are absolutely stabbing in the dark right now. Is that, you know, we haven't seen a starter set for Horus Heresy in forever.
And there's been a lot of rumors for a long time about a new one.
I bet it's going to have Space Marines in it.
Oh, dude, wow. You heard it here first, guys.
Hot tip.
Ricky making his money, breaking brains.
I had a buddy, though. I mean, talk about like horse heresy kits that have a place in 40K or whatever. Somebody, this is an exact message that I got earlier. It was like, he doesn't know if he's prepared to live in a world where contemptors with double multi meltas are actually good. I want to know what year it was.
Yeah. That's fair.
But we might get there.
Yeah. I looked at, the rumors abounding about Horus Heresy, because there's a lot of different
staples. I was talking about that for 40K. Like, I'm thinking that if all these rumors are true of weapon changes, and I mean, we know the Melta stuff. If everything stays kind of like we know it, that might actually be something pretty stout going forward.
I've got that exact Contemptor in my case right now. Double multi-Melta, or the one with the... it's multi-Melta, right?
Yeah, multi-Melta arms.
So that's sitting right over there. I let my son paint it, so it looks like garbage. So it might get stripped.
Is that the single pose one that comes in like two halves and you stick it together?
I think so.
I have this saying that, I mean, you might hear me say a few times, but there's some things that just posed, like I call it the dad pose. You know when you take a picture, with your dad, like a family picture, and you can almost flick back through the years through all your family pictures, and your dad makes the same pose and the same face. You fathers probably do it now. I don't know what it is, but as soon as you become a dad, you're only allowed to make one pose and one face in family photos.
It's cause your back is hurt, and that's why.
From propping this family up.
The face that you're supposed to make when your wife thinks you should be happy.
That's incredible. That's what I like about this. My wife wants a good photo. This is the only applicable configuration of my features. That's what I always thought. That was the dad family photo contemptor. Cause you're just like, oh wow. That is one stale pose, old man.
Oh geez.
And you're saying that's the contemptor dreadnoughts. Is that
No, just that one. Just that one.
That one. Sure. Yeah.
Just that one from that kid. That was the Betrayal of Kalth one.
Yeah.
Was it the, yeah. No.
And he looks like he's put on a lot of weight, but he doesn't want to show it in the picture, so he's sucking it in.
He's sucking the belly in, yeah. He's totally his man.
That's
so good. So good.
God, I can't even look at it the same now.
Yeah, I've ruined it for everybody. Yeah,
ruined contemptors for everyone.
Well, I remember I got one, and I was making a little Night Lords force, 30K Night Lords force, and I spent ages cutting his legs and trimming him and bending his knee and all this stuff. And then I pulled it out. I'm like, I must have spent 2 or 3 hours shaving and green stuffing and converting this guy. And then when I was done, I was like, he looks 10% better.
I mean, Dreadnoughts, we lovingly refer to them as the angry washing machines. And
that's right.
I mean, and the Contemptor is not much better, but they are. I mean, I can't get enough of them. I like having them. I like the idea.
There's always been this thing that felt, maybe it's for people who've been in the game a little bit longer, but there's always this, remember when having one dreadnought was a thing? Like in your army, you'd have a predator, a dreadnought, some tactical marines, one unit of devastators in a pod maybe. And you were like, that was a well-rounded army. And everyone's all like, well, I've got a, when people say distraction carnifex, there used to be a distraction dreadnought, you know, it's the same concept. And it was this magical time when you could take one dreadnought, and if your opponent didn't kill it, it would dominate the table. Yeah. And now it's just like, that's a nice dreadnought you've got. Oh, I can see it. Oh, I guess it's dead.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's the old man Adam thing, boomer gamers with their fingers on the button, can't let go of nostalgia. But yeah, there is a thing that it tickles my heart when I have a dreadnought on the field.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, we can look forward to it. But I was just thinking about, you know, Horus Heresy starter sets. I think that was a game unto of itself that we just called a Horus Heresy starter set.
Yeah, Betrayal at Kalth was supposedly a pretty darn good game. Like, it was supposedly a fun game, but I don't remember ever having played it. I tell you one thing, though. Remember Execution Force that came out? Everybody bought it just to get the assassins.
Yeah.
That game is pretty fun.
I actually played both of the games and liked them both a lot, actually.
Yeah,
you can single player the Execution Assassin, Force, right?
It's 1 to 4 players. So a lot of people don't know that because they never bothered to play the game. They just got the parts out. But yeah, you can play it by yourself. So if game night gets canceled and you're just dying to move some 40K models around, get out your Execution Force and play it. It's actually a pretty fun little game. I like the mechanics of it. So
we do often, you know, just talk about harvesting these the the figures out of the boxes. And I mean, we're all guilty, as I'm not going to shine a light on anyone. We're definitely all guilty of doing that. As they start to release these games into Target and Barnes and Noble and that kind of stuff, Games Workshop has produced some really solid board games in the past. Talisman, was it Fury of Dracula? Several other things that have been
Blood Bowl is great. Like there's tons of games that they make, and I feel bad. Like, can you imagine being the execution force guy, like the guy who come up with the rules for that game? He's like, all right, yeah, we did it. This is it. People are gonna love it. And then, like, you know, it sells like crazy, and then no one ever plays it. You know, because
yeah.
But it's
I don't know. No slight on executioner force designer guy, but I think he knows what's happening at that point. Like they're going to be releasing assassin models that they weren't even available at the time as their own blister.
That was where you got them. Yeah, that was where you got them. I mean, I'm sure they know what
he
we're
was,
doing.
He was
with
at
them.
Peace
yeah, but,
with whatever.
Yeah,
yeah, he was.
Yeah, he got paid.
But I'm saying if the rules just coincidentally happen to be good, I mean, you got to think they want it to be good. But when it happens to be a good board game, you know, maybe we give it a shot, and we may see some of that with the sheer breadth of what seems to be involved in this preview.
Yeah, I mean, Betrayal at Kalth, like probably the greatest game ever, and we'll never know. I'll never know because stuff's gone.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, there were like six, I want to say there were like six, maybe, I think I remember playing like six missions, and it kind of escalated. So like, you know, typical like demo mission only had, you know, a couple models in there, and then it kind of picked up speed. But, you know, so there were actually like set models. So when you received it, there was supposed to be a set number of, and they're all named and everything, like every single one of the Word Bearers versus the Ultramarines and the Dreadnought and everything. And so it was pretty interesting how they escalated the game and it picked up, because the Dreadnought wasn't always in it. You know, he wasn't in every single mission. And so when he did show up, it was like, okay, you've really got to get rid of him, because he had that. Yeah, I think he actually came with an option of either the assault cannon or the multi-melta. And so it was pretty good, though. I mean, really, like it definitely, the missions were oriented well enough with everything that was going on and whatnot. It was, but it wasn't, you know, it's not like even Kill Team or anything. Like it had a board and you had X amount of spaces you could actually move. Like it was like a hexagon map kind of deal.
And different,
so it was
dice.
Interesting.
Didn't it have its own?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it had its own dice and everything that you had to use. Yeah.
They were pretty dice too. I was trying to figure out how I could use them for anything else, but like it just wouldn't work as D6. But I like the look of them. Everything in the game was very well done too. It's just never touched it.
Yeah, and people may groan, but we also have those unphotographed or unwell photographed Marine things.
Yeah, but admittedly, like the last thing people are really crying out for at the moment is some new Marine stuff.
New Marine. Releases.
We need some. It's been days. It's been days, guys.
12 minutes. It's 11 minutes too long between Marine releases.
This is March 147th. It's been at least 2 weeks.
Yeah, but we do. Like, so what was the last one they actually showed us? It's the Predator one, yeah?
The Gladiator.
The Gladiator, which admittedly is pretty cool. It's cool.
It
fine.
Is.
You win, GW. It's cool.
It's hard.
Hey, I'm just going to say it. If y'all want, if you want GW to stop making Marines, stop buying all the Marines, guys. Like,
no.
This is a self-licking lollipop. Y'all doing it to yourselves. I
Says
dare
Ricky.
Y'all. Yeah. As I paint more Marines up. Yeah.
Right. As he opens the show talking about painting Marines.
He's got a librarian in his hand right now.
I'm literally holding a librarian staring at my work. Like, I'm not going to apologize about it. I'm a Marine fanboy. I love Marines. And I played Marines all through the time that Marines sucked. You remember how we used to talk about how, like, Marines, well, you know, people play them because they love them. And that's their first army. And it's the poster boys. So people play them, but they're never going to win tournaments. You remember that? Remember we used to talk about that? Remember in 5th edition, like all the way up through 7th, you weren't winning tournaments with Marines. You were playing them because you loved them, and that was the army you got in the starter set, and then you were going to grow up and move on to Eldar, right? And then it was, you're going to move on to Tau. And then it was, you're going to move on to Tau'dar. And now that Marines finally have their moment to shine, everyone's mad at Marine players. Dude, we've been building these armies for 20 years. Cut us some slack.
Hey, you make some can't points. Refute that.
Hey, you guys remember, I mean, the last release, not the last one, but I mean, just not too long ago, I mean, the Lion was released for 30K. So speaking of buying Marines, I mean, Ricky, I expect you to have at least two or even three of them so that you can have him with all his different weapons at the same time.
I'll buy 10 if it helps you make him, G-Dub.
So I have a lot of I'm in a couple of chats with some other 30k Dark Angels fanboys, and we've created a system akin to like the signal fires for alerting Gondor when Gondor calls for aid. The literal second that book 9 goes up for pre-order, because we're all convinced it's going to sell out almost immediately, one of us will send up the signal and then we'll all gather and immediately be there to press it like on 12:01 p.m. and buy that book, because that thing is going to go out like hotcakes. Ricky,
that's
you
a
want
good
me to buy
a second for the preview.
You want me to buy a second one for you just
in
case?
Probably going to need that.
Or should I add you? Should I send the, I have the Ricky signal?
Because you know, like I'll be in bed. Like, who are we kidding? I'm going to be asleep.
But I mean, that's the sign of the times, isn't it? That we have to do that. There's items that are going to come out that are going to be so sought after, especially Forge World, the Horus Heresy Black Books. Those things, like a full set of those Black Books, are going for thousands of pounds, apparently. I haven't double checked on that. But one of my friends was telling me he was trying to get, I think it's a really rare one. It's book 3 or book 6 or something. And there's a really, really rare one that's just no one can seem to get in hardback. You can get it in softback, but you're like, you don't want to have the whole set in hardback and then have this one limp softback one in the collection. Just like,
yeah, no, once you, I know folks that have anxiety of they've started collecting books in a certain format and they're worried about not getting that next one. And I feel it.
Me too. I feel it as well.
Yeah. I never fully appreciated those Black Books till the first time I got to hold one. You know, it's like, if you have one of those books, other than your family Bible, that's probably the nicest book you have in your house. You know what I'm saying? Like, those books are quality. I can definitely understand not having one of those would drive me bonkers if I was trying to collect the full set.
I'm not trying to impart anxiety on anyone. I'm just saying that you are probably right. If that's something that comes out in this preview, then set a stopwatch, mark your calendar, exact time.
No, I mean, to build on that, the GW collector item stuff, like when that stuff drops and they release that stuff. And I mean, you're right, Paul, like set your timer and whatnot. Like when I found out that they were doing the Tanith Sabbat Crusade limited edition stuff, like I have the campaign book that covers everything up to the most recent Gaunt's Ghost books. And there was also these maps, right? Like leather bound, like sewn maps that came out. Trying to get your hands on that stuff, it's kind of crazy. Like it is an intense endeavor to lock it down. But it is, like Ricky said, I mean, it is some of the best material stuff that I've got as far as like collector item stuff, whatnot. They do a really good job. They don't hold back.
I'm telling you, if they wanted to make just money hand over fist, just give us more maps. Like, dude, seriously, I would have every map. If they would make more of those, like just sweet maps and sell those individually, I'll buy them all.
I follow the person that they commissioned to make a lot of those maps on Twitter.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're just astounding.
It's like, have you seen the website where you can go look at everybody's like domains in 40K right now?
Yep. It's,
those are awesome. Yes. They look great.
I'll put that in the show notes if people haven't checked it out yet. It's just really amazing to see.
Yeah, I love it. Sometimes like if you think back like the codexes and stuff, the codexes do a good job of kind of showing like where each factions are represented and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But just to see the overlay, the website, it shows the entire map and then you just click on a faction and it shows like where they're at currently and their kind of span of control, if you want to call it that. It's pretty cool. I thought it was pretty awesome.
Okay. Well, guys, let's take a break and then we'll come back. We'll be in the future when we come back and we'll see if we were able to predict even a single thing.
I hate time travel, but I'm excited.
That's all right. We can't create any paradoxes because we're going forward in time.
It's true.
To find out how wrong
Yeah. However, if we come back, then we're screwed.
That's it. Well, guys, thanks y'all for joining me for this half. I'll see y'all in a few minutes.
See ya.
Can't wait.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I got Adam and Red here.
Hello. Hot off that preview.
Yeah, so Ricky can't join us this morning. We're actually recording my morning right after the preview, like we said. Hey, we weren't wrong about everything.
No, we were right about a couple of things, actually.
Yeah, at least
which is good for us. It's refreshing.
Well, how pumped are you about the ninth book? What is it, Crusade?
Ricky's going to be kicking himself. He's not here to talk about Crusade, but I've been waiting for this book for a long time. Dark Angels are my love of the power armed variety. Sorry, Black Templars, but Dark Angels fluff just grabbed me that little bit more. And yeah, really excited. That whole thing, it's so Horus has sent the whole Night Lord's Legion to stop the Dark Angels from making it to Terra. And it's just sick that it's such a cool concept and idea. And you got these, they talked about it on the preview, you got these opposing kind of dichotomies, this yin and yang of what a Space Marine Legion is. You got the Dark Angels, which are supposed to be the epitome, the core, the template, and the most purest form of a Dark Angel, of a Space Marine Legion, as in has all the different facets. It all works in concert. It's a very combined arms approach. And then you have the Night Lords, which are the abhorrent, like, end of the road of just debauchery and, like, vile, psychopathic nature. It's incredible.
Did you say psychopathic or did you say psychopathic?
Psychopath. Okay. Psychopath. I'm a bit passionate. But man, those Terminators, my God, those are some of the best looking Terminators I've ever seen. I say that every time I see new Terminators.
Well, okay. I think that we love the way Terminators look. In general, Terminators are very cool. They've always been cool. I think part of the reason that we want Terminators to be great in 40K is because of the nostalgic factor of wanting a Terminator on the tabletop.
Yeah. Well, it used to be the toughest model you could own, the toughest guys you could have on the table. And yeah, they were just cool.
Tactical dreadnought armor.
Yeah. It meant something in the day. And it looks like it's going to mean something again. Ninth edition is being very nice to them so far.
And they're wearing skin.
Yes, they're wearing people's skin. They're lovely, lovely guys.
And it looks like one of them is standing on a disemboweled torso.
Yeah, just a random torso. He's like, I'm just going to kick this torso down the street. So, yeah, people just kick rocks down the street. He's got a torso. It's his favorite torso. No one knows where he got it. It's Steve. He just likes his torsos.
Do you think he's dribbling like a soccer ball?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
That's probably what he's doing. He's just dribbling.
it's his favorite torso. But those, man, the stances, the weapons, everything about those guys. Something about an underslung heavy weapon on a Terminator tickles my giblets. I love it. It's fantastic.
If we take out Sanguinius as the Primarch that is the best looking Primarch, including is also being the best Primarch.
As in the prettiest, except for the art on the Ruinstorm cover piece with his cornrows and his little curly Sue hair. Yes, I agree.
The lion model here looks pretty good.
He's fantastic.
I mean, I know we talked about it before, but I love this aesthetic of where it looks like there's just a wave of Night Lords trying to do something to him, and he's sitting there, not even breaking a sweat, just laid them all out. Mm-hmm.
It's what they have done with the Primarch models, I think will stand. They all stand the test of time. There is not a bad sculpt there. They're all going to be evergreen. There's never going to be a day where you look at one of the Primarch models and goes, yeah, it's not that good. They're freaking fantastic, man. And like, kudos to Forgewell for not pulling any punches and getting the best of the best artists, the best of the best craftsmanship on those models, because every single one of them takes my breath away. And I think they're all, when you see one in the flesh, you're like, this is something special. And I think that's it's phenomenal.
His pose, I mean, again, I know when we got it spoiled originally, we talked about it, kind of gushed over it, but I really like this model and the pose to where it's just like, can I do something with that? Could that be like my third Sanguinius model in some way? Can I figure out a way?
Probably not, to be honest.
Don't crush my dreams.
Sorry, mate. Sorry. You should. But yeah, I don't know. He looked pretty cool with wings, though, wouldn't he? With like furled wings. Furled wings. He actually, no, you're right. He would look cool. You'd have to do a head swap and a lot of cutting. But
he another head. He comes with the helmeted head, from what I remember.
He does, yeah. Yep.
Well, you know, look, I'm not saying I'm going to do that. I'm saying that this model invokes me to feel like I might want to try that.
I mean, so, you know, like Paul said, this has been previewed for a little bit. So it's been pretty hot. I totally agree that, I mean, all of the Primarch models are just fantastic in regards of when they previewed it and they previewed this book, they showed the Night Lords range, which has been around, you know, outside of the new previews. But those Night Lords models are not new by any means. But that doesn't mean they are any less fantastic, right? They still, the attention to detail that's been given to the Horus Heresy is a real, I mean, I truly think it's a testament to what we can appreciate about the hobby in general and what they've done. And adding in the Dark Angel developments as they've been shown over the last, you know, what, 6 months, 8 months or so. I mean, their Terminators look great. The new Night Lord Terminators look great. I mean, they really knocked it out of the park with this being, and I gotta say, I really love the galactic scope of how this whole thing's playing out, right? Because you've got the Ultramarines versus the Word Bearers, and the World Eaters are also there to a certain extent. And then that's one environment. And then you've got the Shattered Legions from Istvan V still going around trying to, bring themselves together to get there. You've got Sanguinius and the Blood Angels fighting the demons at Cygnus Prime. And then you've also got this thing over here, and that's not even, Space Wolves versus Thousand Suns, that whole thing. And now, we start digging into this, the Thromas Crusade, which are, I mean, I especially after the Soul Hunter books on the Night Lords, I mean, I've always been a big fan, and I really like the way that they presented it. They did a great job of pointing out that, as you guys mentioned, that dichotomy between the two, the Night Lords and the Dark Angels. And if you get a chance to read the Horus Heresy books on Imperium Secundus and what Gilliman tries to set up, and the interactions with the Dark Angels and Lionel Johnson shows up, I that's always stuck with me, because he's always doing that thing where when he shows up amongst his brothers, and obviously Horus got picked for the War Master and all, but Lionel Johnson, like, I think he refers to himself, or he chides people, and he's not, he doesn't joke, but he's like first among equals kind of deal, like, he is the first legion. There's just this really cool military air about him, whereas in complete contrast, Conrad is just this, I mean, there's a malevolence to him, right? And it's pretty amazing to read some of his stuff too, and just, I mean, for being one thing, he's kind of a force of nature in and of himself. And so, man, I just, it's so good to see this part of it being highlighted, and the fact that they're not really holding back in regards to what's being presented and developed. Like, I would be, some people, and I totally understand where they moved on to the Siege of Terra and everything in the books, but I'm totally cool with them continuing to flesh this stuff out. Like, just take their time, keep giving us material. Like, it's a beautiful game. I understand it's still 7th edition rules and all, but I don't think that's as much of a problem necessarily. I mean, really, there's a lot more that goes into the game necessarily than it's not necessarily about a, I don't want to say it's not competitive, but it's not necessarily like a GT kind of hobby, 30K, in my opinion.
Firstly, there's so much I could talk about the backstory of the lion and and how he thinks. Well, he's of the opinion that if he was found first instead of Horus, he'd be the War Master.
Right.
So he has the second best war record of any of the Primarchs. Horus is the only one who had a better one. But Horus had essentially Horus, from the lion's point of view, was given all the glory jobs. Like, for example, Ulanor.
I mean, the Lunar Wolves, they're the ones that took over the moon. They were sent to, were the first off-planet conquest.
Mm-hmm.
Horus and, saved the Emperor's life, at least in the story. In the legend of whatever the story, I shouldn't say in the story, I think it's the narration, the retelling of whatever that legend is, Horus saved the Emperor.
Yeah. So there's this perception about the Dark Angels that they always get the dirty jobs, the thankless ones.
And, let's hold on there, Mr. Dark Angel. Iron Warriors have a bone to pick with your argument. Keep going. All right. You're good.
So there's this period, which I love and loathe this about Forge World, but there's a period in the heresy called the Rangdon Xenocides. And there's like two or three of these things. And the third one that happened, where the Rangdo, whatever the species was finally eradicated and wiped out, cost literally half the Dark Angels Legion to accomplish. They were the most numerous Legion, and post Rangda, their Legion was cut in half, and the Ultramarines were now the most numerous Legions of a powerful Legion. So lines of the opinion, if Rangda didn't happen, he would have been War Master after Ulanor, because he would have had the most powerful Legion. He would have demonstrated his absolute potency, his absolute dominance over like what was essentially the first or second worst threat that the Imperium ever faced during the Crusade, which is the Rangda guys, because apparently they wiped out whole expedition fleets. It's suspected they had a hand in wiping out one of the legions that has been redacted or whatever, or turned them, or some craziness. But there's this whole they won't tell us anything about this except that it happened and it decimated the Dark Angels. And phenomenal. Apparently the Emperor had to take a hand personally to make sure these things got wiped out. I just love that. I love the fact that we don't know enough.
Well,
do you guys get that as well?
I think that's part of the charm, you know, of the stories or whatever, is like, you know, there's always going to be like the next rock to overturn. Mm-hmm. And if you're out there and you haven't gotten one of these black books or the Horus Heresy books before, there's like half again as much new lore in it as the existing stuff. So you're going to get the, you know, what you expect from your Legion, but then there's like more stuff. Mm. It talks about more characters, more stories, more elements, different things about the home world. You know, it's neat how it's just, again, it's half as much stuff, but it's all relevant.
I guess we should probably move on. We've got a lot to talk about.
Well, preview. I mean, if
I would just spend 20 minutes on that book.
Yeah, briefly cover the Necromunda stuff is that someone put this in the preview chat. It's like you're purchasing two doggos and you get all these other free figures.
That's perfect.
Man,
House of Iron, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, House of Iron, but it's the build-on kit to the Orlok gang. And I got to say, so I'm sitting here looking at them right now. I'm using Orlok gangers to kind of fill out some of the gang-like elements of my Tanith, right? Because in the story, they adopt gangers from Vergast into their army. And it's kind of part of their aesthetic to a certain degree. And so I'm doing that. And this thing comes out. And, man, I'm just looking at every single, like, bit that could possibly come out of that. I'm like, oh, man, I've got to now
that gang champion or whatever he is. I mean, he's perfect. A platoon commander, sergeant dude.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Something like that. Like, they look great. I mean, it's just fantastic looking. And like I said, you know, we were talking a little bit about some of these other products because, you know, this was not really, as much as we love it and all, but this was just, there wasn't a ton of 40K material, but the Necromunda and the other stuff, I mean, it's still amazing stuff. And there's just so much more to this Necromunda material that it really is a gift that keeps giving, as far as when you start, you know, like you said, Paul, in the chat there, someone mentioned using those jump packs on the Orlok guys to, you could possibly start using those for like the Elysian jump troops, mm-hmm. and whatnot. There's a lot of good stuff that comes out of this conversion.
Beef up some Scion units. I mean, just to make, you know, not Scions look great, but the Scions don't all fit every army aesthetic. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know that I could throw these on a Catechin, but
you could put them on a Scion, that's for sure.
You could put some Catechin, you know, maybe make some Catechin Scions with these drop packs.
Yeah.
And like this, yeah, there's just the humanoid aesthetic, like, you could just do so much with that. There's so many options in the fact that the Imperium gets so much love, I guess, really, really, really leaves the door open for so many different things. But one of the things I really liked, so I remember the first, Aram Dempsey Bowden's Talon of Horus and Black Legion novels. It does go through some stages where they describe the Black Legion serfs as being pretty regimented, pretty organized. So if you play a Black Legion army, you wanted to be some like first Black Crusade Black Legion guys, maybe you use some Orlocks, maybe you cast them up,
you
just
go away from the
just
cultist rabble,
exactly,
you know,
and they're organized, yeah. like the old Forge World militia, you know, they're regimented, these are fighting men, these are warriors, these are, you know,
they're perfect.
Exactly. Yeah, pretty cool. So the Wild West video that they showed, you know, showing all the gunslingers in 40K was pretty neat. But then to tail it into that, see, this is another thing we got right. The Hexmark Destroyer, which we didn't know the name for or whatever, but with that dude creeping around the back in that picture.
That's right. Mm. Yep, that Hexmark Destroyer. Like, I mean, I think there were a lot of folks in the Necron world, I might have mentioned this, you know, kind of were looking to see if it was going to be like the new Flayed One or something like that. But I don't think anybody's complaining about having, reportedly from the preview, I mean, six guns. It's a Hexmark Destroyer, meaning it's a destroyer. It's a death mark that has bought into the destroyer cult. And yeah. So he's going to have I believe they mentioned he has a ballistic skill of 2, and then he's got exploding shots, and his guns are, they say he's supposed to be able to delete a unit of infantry. And so I'm interested to see what that ends up turning out to be, but
right. I'm slightly skeptical. I mean, obviously that's a little bit of, you know, hyperbole.
Yeah.
But I saw this guy, and then when they were, of course, talking about the Western Z quote from, was it Val Kilmer in Tombstone or whatever, where the guy's like, "You're seeing double." He's like, "That's okay.
I have got two guns. Both of you.
One for each of you." He's seeing six, and he's got six guns. You know, he's a true six shooter.
The model is fantastic. I would like to ask a designer why the step away from the hover dudes, because they are like the Scorpec, well, everything's the big boy, the character. So this is the second released destroyer character. You have the Scorpec mm-hmm. Lord, now you got this dude, and they're all tripod. They're all the three legged guys instead of the hovering dudes that we've had for, well, since they were first released. I wonder why the aesthetic change. You guys got any ideas?
I mean, you know, so they did keep the hover one to the point, but you're right. This is a new element that has kind of been, I think that it has to do with, and of course, you know, I think the lore connection is that these are guys that existed before that have been kind of unearthed. And so it's not like they're necessarily making a new development, but that these things were there before. And I might be wrong. We'll get the codex and we'll see in October. But I do think it has something to do with, you know, in Pariah, we got the release of the upgraded version of Saris, right? The Necron equivalent of Fabius Bile, right?
Yep.
More or less. And if you notice, he's one of the, I believe before even then, he was still probably one of the only Necron, like, infantry looking models that had those kinds of legs.
Yeah.
And so I want to say this is kind of like, from, because the destroyers all agreed to like modify themselves, right? So they join the destroyer cult and they upgrade their bodies from what they were to these more deadly versions. And so maybe Saris had something to do with exactly how they came about to this point, since they all share that aesthetic.
Hmm. While we're on the philosophy topic, isn't it just interesting how they let Necrons have a cult? As in, there's a religious form of Necrons, you know. It's like a Dalek. They're essentially the Daleks, you know, for a lot of intents and purposes. When you put a Dalek and a Terminator together, you get a Necron. Exterminate. Hence, but
is the Destroyer virus still a thing?
Well, there's the Flayer virus, and that's the Flayed ones, and they almost convinced themselves that they're still alive, which is. Sorry, Red, you explain it better than I
would. No. You're right on it as far as the Flayer deal. And the Flayer, arguably, from some of the lore, is connected to a Satan that we don't really see, or we haven't really seen, like, as a representative. But there was a Satan that was the Flayer. And so they think that there's some connection between the Flayer virus, what they would call, you know, like they have, like, they have issues, kind of like a Xandric. Not Oberyn. Oberyn watches over Xandric, but Xandric has issues with like detaching himself from his past life as a Necrontyr. And so that's where the Flayed One. But the Destroyer thing, I don't know. I bet you at some point, Paul, they have termed it as something of a virus. But it's definitely a mindset that whether they go crazy, it's kind of like a chicken before the egg thing. Like, which one came first? Was it a virus deal, or was it a willing cult? Mm. You know, did they buy into it? And so I know for the most part that I believe that they vote themselves into it, right? Like, okay, I'm tired of this. I just want to destroy everything. I'm going to go destroyer mode and upgrade, buy into all the upgrades that come with the destroyer cult.
Mm.
But yeah, it's definitely a protocol thing, right?
Aesthetically, I believe it. I like it because it gives you those different visual profiles in the army. So now you can have a whole destroyer army from basically now, and you've got different tiers of visual. Like you're going to have these folks that are on the ground, and then you're going to have those folks that are, you know, in the middle tier of the characters, and then you'll see the destroyer. Are the ones that we know about, you know, the ones that we've had forever now be floating a little bit above them. So you've got that, you know, visual levels as your arm, your eyes can travel up and be like, oh, neat, neat. Oh, and that's neat too. And they're different.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Diversifying the model range as well.
Yeah. But I mean, still, that was talking about how these guys embrace that I need to tack as much stuff onto my body to strike terror in my enemy, to kill more flesh beings, you know, like whatever it takes. Yeah, no probs. Stick it on. Hover jets, cool. Bolt it.
They're like so like you think about it, like you got the flesh is weak for the Iron Hands, and then you got the flesh is extra weak for the Admech. And now like when you go full metal and then you're a Necron, you're like, man, this metal is weak. I need to go destroy a cult.
See, I feel like if I had I was a robot body and I needed an attachment, stick it on. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, as if you wouldn't have claws. I would want a giant crab claw.
I mean, well, that's okay. I don't know about claws, but if, you know, if I needed a built-in remote, a universal remote for anybody's TV or something, you know.
So you're so much more practical than I am. I was just like, yeah, crab claws, sweet. And he's just like, yeah, something actually good.
A built-in toaster, you know, something. Or a deep fryer, if I want wings on demand.
Well, I mean, look at the Scorpec Lord, right? I'm not saying that he isn't the case in point example, but dude's got multiple arms. He's like a Swiss Army knife, right? He's got a big sword, a big claw, a big gun. Like, it's kind of hard to argue with what you think you might need after a certain point, right? Like, it kind of opens. He can open, you know, a can of beans.
And he can, yeah.
And he can open a bottle of wine, and he can, you know, shotgun a can of beer. So, like, he can do it all. It's all there.
So that's what you would take. You would take some kind of Swiss Army attachment.
I need something to open up whatever I'm drinking at the moment. That's right.
That may be what. So I think I just described maybe a Adeptus Mechanicus, you know, tech priest or whatever, and you got over there, you're rocking the Cryptek Overlord or whatever on your side.
I just want my crap floor. I'm a simple man.
I really like the look of this model, and I hope it's cool. I do hope it can come on and kill multiple units. Unless those guns are D2, which
it's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough to wipe out things. The Marine world everything's moving to two wounds.
They confirmed a couple of the rules that it has. They confirmed that it hits on twos, and they confirmed that it gets more shots for every hit it has, and it has six guns, so you can assume it has a minimum of six shots. So, and they also confirmed it's a destroyer, so it hits on two, it rerolls once to hit. So it's going to be hitting on twos, rerolling extra shots. So if it's got six shots, you can almost guarantee you're going to get somewhere between 10 and 12 hits.
Well, yeah, what was unclear to me was whether or not you got extra shots on the kill or extra shots on hits. And
yeah, that's true.
I kind of got the impression that it was on the kill, which is still not bad.
Because
with six shots, you would imagine hitting on twos and whatever strength. They said it had a little AP. We don't know what it is, but it's probably enough to kill at least one Marine. So you're probably going to get your effect to go off. Like you're there are probably very few times where he comes in and doesn't get to reroll or to roll additional dice.
So I looked at the promo for the guy. I just hope he's as cool as the promo, because the promo was sick.
Yeah.
I mean, the gunslinger thing.
The model is amazing. I mean, I'll be painting up at least one of them, and looking forward to it. I think that with the color scheme that I use for Necrons, and it'll really shine with these tubes that it has and the faceplate. I think it'll be cool.
Like I said, I will admit that I'll probably wait to see the rules first, but I'm highly doubting that the rules are going to be enough to ignore. So I think it's going to come. I think there's going to be one.
in the interest of time, and then also wanting to devote some segment on the next show to talk about specifically about Crusade, we the next thing that came up was a Crusade supplement and a terrain supplement, and then a book about terrain, which we'll probably spend the most time talking about. But the additional terrain the kits have all been phenomenal, and with the rules that you can apply on those things, and we talked about that before, this Vertigus box seems to give you a couple of different like vehicles for different keywords, and it will add to if you already have an existing terrain collection, I think, pretty well.
Yeah, I think I gotta say, especially like in 8th edition, how many obstacle, barrier, you know, defense line kind of deals did you really see on the field?
Yeah, they were awkward to interact with.
Right. And yeah. And I do think that there is space there in the current setup to put them. And I like that Vertius brings the pipes in. And I do think that we should see more of those. I think that defense lines and allowing you to do one of the two things that are in the rules, that, you know, whether you increase your overwatch or you brace for combat or something like that. I think that there should be more of those in there. I don't think I understand people are comfortable with more area related terrain or just straight up obstacles. I do think, though, that barricades, barriers, defense lines, those kinds of things should be an element to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think, and it also comes with this cool Imperial jukebox or whatever.
Yeah, I like that jukebox. That's very cool.
Yeah. Anyway, I like the plastic terrain. Is it becomes easier to work with, modular. This has a kind of a chunky feel to it. This is the main difference between the older kits and the new ones. It's probably got almost feels like double the thickness in the plastic. So it's just a little beefier, chunkier, has fewer bits that you could stab yourself on when you're reaching across the table, because that was the worst part of the old terrain. I really like the old terrain because really, do you need a thicker piece of plastic when you're just trying to get line of sight blocking and you want?
Yeah,
you don't. But you did poke yourself a lot on those old ones, and there seems to be less impaling poking parts on the new stuff.
I think just the modularity of the terrain kits they've brought out ever since the Sector Mechanica stuff, the stuff with the big walkways and all the silos and stuff. It's amazing. I've got a full table of the stuff. And when I was building, I was just like, this stuff is amazing. And they've only gotten better since then. So yeah, kudos to them. I'm sure this stuff will be the same high quality and it looks fantastic. Like, there's no two ways about it.
The next thing for 40K, and this has gotten the most heat. I mean, we are moments after the preview, and I've already seen this kind of stuff come up in chats and in Facebook groups, and even in the chat itself for the preview is the newest chapter approved reveal mission pack with tactical deployment, master terrain to control the battlefield. And what we heard from this is that it encourages people to bring three pieces of terrain with their army to play with. Now, I don't know. It says there's 18 new match play missions in it. It was said which allows you to bring your own themed terrain to use it to create a balanced battlefield alongside your opponent for close fall games. That's what it says on the thing. I'm not making that up, but I don't know how. Like, from that, I don't know if it's a requirement to use player brought terrain to use the new missions. I don't know how married those two concepts are together, but there's been a lot of thoughts on that.
And I had some strong reactions to this when I first heard it. And I honestly, I'm sitting on the fence. I think I'd have to wait and see what the rules are regarding about the terrain placement. Like, you'd assume there was an extensive, well thought out process about how you place terrain. Because if it is just, I get to bring my three pieces of terrain, you bring your three, roll off, I chuck one of mine down first, you chuck one of yours down. That's going to bring so many insane issues and game ability and levels of possible non-interactivity or feel bads that I could do a 3-hour episode just me talking by myself of all the possible scenarios in which that could really annoy me.
and this is, now we don't know the rules of what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there may be something that says bring a piece of terrain that doesn't occupy more than X by X,
exactly right.
You know, or with no, you can use the obscure keyword twice. You know, I mean, who knows? I don't know what's in there. Like, I have no idea, but it does say you could run a tactical deployment event, you know, where you just provide the tables and a roof and then everyone else figures it out. And then it just as a, I mean, just as devil's advocate, but I mean, I share your thoughts like 100%, but just as a point of conversation, if it is gameable, and or if it's exploitable, let me put it that way, because everything's gameable. But if it's exploitable and everyone's doing it, does that in and of itself equal it out?
Yeah, well, there is that factor. So when they said the TO would only have to bring, essentially provide space and tables, I immediately thought, hey, this is a great way for people to get people who are building up their, or events that are building up their stockpile of terrain over time. They don't have, you know, it's very hard to get a high level of high quantity of high level terrain for an event that's literally just starting up in its first couple of years or weeks or whatever. So I thought this is a great idea. If especially if you can get maybe just half the people to bring their own terrain and then the rules apply to everybody or whatnot, that would also lower the barrier to entry, because that's where I had the concerns. Is this just adding another couple of $100 on the barrier to entry to competitive games? Am I now forced to, well, essentially, if I'm buying everything from G-Dub,
to be a filthy meta chaser, and that also include a couple of extra terrain kits.
Well, I'm talking about little Jimmy, who's just bought his, he's got his Indominus set, and he's got some other bits and pieces. He's got his Repulsor Executioner to go on with his awesome Black Templars, because he's a mad dog of a human being, little Jimmy. And all of a sudden, he's like, okay, well, I think I can go play, you know, I've spent 3 months painting the stuff up, buying all this stuff. He rocks up and he's like, oh, sorry, mate, you didn't bring your three train pieces. Is that rough? Is that just adding another expectation onto already something that's already got a very high barrier to entry?
I see your point. I really don't have a counter to that. If you're building an event, you could, and if it's small or if it's just your gaming club, you can, that's something you could all accomplish socially without needing a mission pack around it.
Yeah, that's true. Around it. Yeah, but I suppose if you were doing that, maybe this adds a bit of flavor and a bit of fun to that process anyway.
Yeah,
something you're already going to do, and this adds some extra quirks and extra intrigue.
And so, without seeing it, you know, in my, we don't know how it all maths out, but if these missions are designed with that specific thing in mind, and it's done well, and you know, maybe it is just an alternative style event. I'm curious to see if you could get this book and then not use that as a component. Like, what do these missions add otherwise? But it's 18 new match play missions. The match play is not just tournament play. You know, remember that match play is just a set of rules. It doesn't have to be at a tournament.
Yeah, that's fair. And look, I am talking with some. I'm more talking concerns. I don't have any facts. I don't know anything apart from what they've told us.
This is initial. We're moments after the preview, right? We don't know anything other than what is there and what was said.
And I'm not going to tell you that this is bad or that you shouldn't buy it or that this is going to be a bad product for the scene. I'm just going to tell you that on face value from what they've told me, I hope this is well fleshed out and well thought out. And that's all I'll say.
Yeah, we have more questions. So
exactly. I'll wait for more to be revealed before I make any conclusions.
Like, yeah, you guys have nailed it on the head in a lot of regards. And I think that that's some really fair criticism, Adam, and what you're pointing out. I do think, and I don't know if I'm devil's advocating it or I'm just looking at it from, especially like, say, you know, we'll talk about the Crusade stuff later, but from that kind of angle, and kind of how cool would it be if, like, people at an event built it in where, like, okay, you've got your, now we understand you get your 10 points for every game, you know, for having a painted army, but also if, like, there was like a theme scoring, you know, not to make it so competitive that it, you know, you're sitting there min maxing it, but at the same time, okay, you have to bring three pieces of terrain relatively within these parameters, so you can't, you know, bring something that, you know, you might be able to be overly gamey about or something like that, and it has to be themed into your army. And so, and then to be able to take that themed terrain and mix it with the themed terrain of the other person. And now you've got this blended theme of your, both your armies, where, you know, you've based all your models to your terrain. They've based all their models to their terrain, so on and so forth. And I think it just helps build kind of this blended picture, right? Because, like, in a comprehensive hobby fashion, sometimes it's weird when, and I'm not saying it takes away from it. I'm not making a major complaint here. I'm saying that this could in some capacity, and like Paul was saying, amongst like a gaming club where, you know, you find yourself playing frequently and often, because we understand this can't possibly extend. Like, I'm not gonna fly to LVO with a bunch of terrain on top of the army, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Your army and you know, 2 4-foot pieces, like, how do you, that's right. Not even practical at all. That's that is great. Great point.
Yeah, another couple $100 on baggage for me to come from Australia with my half a table of terrain.
right. So, and that's the thing, like, you know, and honestly, 3 pieces, for example, I mean, we've been playing around with it and trying to figure out what the right balance of terrain is one way or the other. And like I said, you know, parameter wise, I mean, like, I've been looking at tables that have maybe 12 pieces of major or major to minor terrain, and then like six to eight pieces of tertiary terrain, right? That's like the barricades and stuff like that. And so tell someone that they've got to bring 2 major to medium pieces and 1 tertiary piece or something like that. And, you know, it just, I think it's got some aspects to it that could be cool. I think it's a nice to add on. It's not necessarily a requirement for the game by any means. I think that's a really good point. The ceiling of the game and trying to get into it without pushing someone over the threshold, for the most part, you know, a lot of our clubs have stuff, but like, I mean, who wouldn't want to bring, you know, a Chaos player that has a Noctolith crown that they don't necessarily play as it is in the game, but that they bring it as a, you know, an obscuring obstacle for the battlefield or something like that.
Yeah. Good point. We're already, some of us, you know, we incorporate plastic kits into our display board, and if you could just use them as, you know, also on the table, why not?
Right.
And for the vast majority of people who've been playing this game for X amount of years, you'll have everyone's, I can tell you right now, I've got 3 tables worth of terrain in my house. Do I use them often? No. Right. Is it a big chip off my shoulder to bring some terrain to an event? No. I usually, anytime a TO asks me to bring terrain, I bring my 2 or 3 tables of terrain to an event.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same for the vast majority of people who in our scene. Everyone's really willing to chuck their stuff forward for the greater good of the community. I suppose this could be seen as no different to that, I guess.
Well, I mean, sure. It's given a little structure around a social concept that you guys were just talking about, and that's not bad. But again, reserving judgment until we see it,
absolutely,
how it all interacts.
Yeah.
But I think it's a little weird, you know, where we are. I think, but because we're coming at it from that traveling tournament player perspective.
Yeah, yes. We are. Yeah, we're all playing on a national level, if not an international level at times. And yeah, it doesn't quite make sense from that. But like your club mates, you know, you have your weekly or monthly GT or whatever. Perfect.
Yeah. So the next bit that we got was Warcry. And I won't go over all the granular bits of this stuff, but I didn't expect a Warcry starter set. Another starter. I didn't expect it at all.
Yeah, not a starter set. I expected there to be something when they start talking about shadows and iron. Like I said, you know, and before, you know, in the first part of this, I expected something, and I was glad to see I was vindicated in regards of the Dark Elves. Man, that got me really excited.
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah, that is an amazing looking warband, and then introducing the non-3D way to play with this, and having I think people were like, I don't know about a box set with just that, and then when they flipped the board over, the chat lit up with like, okay, yep, I'm back in, because that Warcry terrain is phenomenal.
Yep,
yeah, absolutely awesome. And then there was a lot of people talking about, you know, RIP Kill Team. Now, they didn't go over every game system in this preview. We didn't talk about Blood Bowl, so Blood Bowl's obviously not going away. Kill Team uses the previous edition's rules. So I would have to imagine that maybe if we do get, like, Kill Team's not going away, I can't imagine it's going to go away, but maybe it will evolve, or maybe there just wasn't anything to share with Kill Team like there wasn't anything to share with Blood Bowl in this particular preview.
Yeah.
Which, as an advocate, I love Kill Team.
I mean, there wasn't any Adeptus Titanicus here. There wasn't any Aeronautica here. Like, doesn't mean those games are dying or gone.
Yeah. And then getting we saw the next edition of the next season of Warhammer Underworlds. Warhammer Underworlds, I mean, I've said this before, but it's kind of close to like the perfect game.
Yeah. They even said it. Wait, was it Warhammer Underworlds? They said was the perfect Warhammer. They even stated it. That is the perfect Warhammer competitive game.
You have some tokens, you've got some dice, you got some cards, you've got some models, you've got a confined board that you can play anywhere. In a park, in a cafe, you could play almost anywhere. And the games last 15 minutes. So, like, it's got it all. And I like how I like the seasonal concept that they're introducing, and that they mentioned that there's going to be 5 or 6 more warbands that come out even past this one. This is like a good, really, this is a good preview for Slaanesh. And
yeah, a lot of Slaanesh.
Yeah, there was some bemoans that Slaanesh is getting another box set, like the Shadow of Pain.
Yeah,
but I mean, also, because
they were in the Khornverse Slaanesh one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is there another one that they're in that I'm not thinking of?
Yeah, so it's this one. There's Shadow and Pain has mortals of Slaanesh in it, as well as a few demons.
The Hedonites.
Yeah. Hedonites. I love that.
And this is like we saw with the Eldar on the 40K side. This is an avenue, a box set where they're releasing these two new character models in a set with some existing figures.
Yeah, I can't help but think this is a way of making us get some of those old models on the table. Like those the Hellstalkers, the mortals riding the fiends, not the fiends, the seekers.
Yeah,
they're called
seekers. Yeah,
the steeds of Slaanesh. Like I haven't seen those since was it 5th edition fantasy?
Yeah.
So it's like it's literally pretty much a decade since I saw those on the table. When they had them in that box, I'm like, they still make those? What?
That chariot is seeing some different pop. Like I've seen the chariot pop up in a couple of 40K lists every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But the one with the combine on the front of it, it's the wide Slaanesh chariot model. But look, as someone, I don't have these figures, any of them. I mean, I have some demonettes, but I don't have anything else. And I've always liked the Daughters of Cain, but I don't have them. So
yeah,
this might be a reason to get them. I mean,
the issue for me, as
someone who likes models.
Yeah, I guess my only issue with this box would be one half of it is glorious, beautiful, fantastic new models that are relatively new, phenomenal sculpts of a very high quality. And then there's ones that are literally decades old that I have not seen, had not heard of, and I wasn't sure they existed anymore until I saw them in this box. There is a bit of an issue when you compare these two. I mean, apart from the characters, man, both of those characters, freaking amazing models.
You've got some interesting shoes. That's for sure. He's some fashion choices here.
He's got weird ass shoes, doesn't he? I don't
necessarily agree with.
That mace, though, man. That mace is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. But the other character model is, it's astounding. But that line is very good.
It is fantastic. Everything, every model in that line is legit amazing. There's not a bad sculpt in that. The Daughters of Cain, you're talking?
Yeah. Yeah, the Daughters of Cain. And then this Marathi book.
So this is essentially a fluff piece. Yeah, there's I got the impression that there's going to be some rules novel. There's some rules books coming. Broken Realms, a new expansion, or essentially maybe the next edition.
Next campaign setting or whatever. But I really love this piece of artwork that they're showing here of what looks to be Slaanesh breaking out of the prison, like that lightning bolt going across and striking down that pylon. Real cool.
Yeah, well, Slaanesh didn't get a lot of love for a very long time in both fantasy and 40K when the old world was still a thing.
Yeah, Slaanesh they've been in a box, essentially. So after the end times, Slaanesh was essentially replaced on the Pantheon by the Great Horned Rat.
Yep.
I mean, that's my impression of it anyway. It's been a while since I've looked at it. But Slaanesh, there was all these, until we saw the Daughters of Cain come out with... You know, with the witch elves or whatever and stuff, you know, that we thought that 40K may be taking Warhammer may be trying to shy away from those types of models and aesthetics. But
and that aesthetics, yeah.
Yeah. They weren't. Well, and here we're getting some story around it.
The thing is, for literally a couple of years, we got, until the Keeper of Secrets came out, Slaanesh hadn't seen any love in about 5 or 6 years. Not a single model, not a single peep, not a single nothing. Whereas Nurgle got like, 2 new ranges of models in both the Maggotkin and all the new demons, as in like firstly the new Nurglings and the Bloat Drones, and then the next wave being the new Beasts and the new Great Unclean One. And then Khorne got the same deal. Khorne got the Bloodbound, which is one of the first Age of Sigmar armies and got a huge amount of support. On top of that, then they got the new Karanak and Fleshhound models. And they just seem to be getting loads and loads and loads of stuff. The new Bloodthirster.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but yeah, until we had this, and now we've just had essentially a very good 18 months with Slaanesh. I mean, the new Keeper of Secrets has become the premier greater daemon for Chaos Daemons in 40K, bar none. Like maybe the unkillable Lord of Change is up there. But right now, Keepers are just fantastic, and I love it because the models are beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they're so good looking. As well as the fiends are really good as well. I can't say I'm in love with the demonettes, but they're not bad. Yeah, very good. Very good, like 18 months.
You say those multiple Nurgle releases like they were a bad thing. No, God, no.
But I was just pointing out the discrepancies in how much love literally every other god got, while Slaanesh got nothing. And then, well, people are saying, oh, there's so much Slaanesh. That's because they didn't get anything. They didn't get anything for ages. So yeah, I'm happy they're getting a bunch of stuff now.
So with the, you know, everything's got this new Age of Sigmar makeover, so where it's not, you know, it's not dark elves anymore. They're the Daughters of Cain with these snake bodies and different types of things. But then in the Warcry release, we're seeing some things that evoke that old dark elf aesthetic.
They're still there, man.
Yeah, what do you think?
They're still there. Man, I'm so hyped about it because it really suggests, and I know, you know, Warcry is like in the shattered, you know, broken out areas, what essentially would have been the chaos wastes of the old world. But now it's, you know, but anyways, that, man, to see the dark elves and to be fair, like we saw one right back when the Silver Tower box set dropped, mm-hmm. and you saw there was that one character that almost like shade kind of guy who could flip
Tenable Shard. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so the shard could, yeah. And so, and they've always talked about, even with this, you know, alluding to the Slaanesh being trapped and how the elves together under Malarion, which we talked about earlier, hid Slaanesh away so that his followers or her followers, her followers couldn't find him, her. And then it's because Malarion's back there somewhere, right? And he's like, at least as far as we understand it, he's not very active as far as going outside of it. Whereas Barathee, I'm pretty sure if you read some of the lore and everything, she's kind of angry that she was like playing all these angles. And while she has maybe ascended to a degree, she hasn't achieved what she wanted. And so that's she hasn't achieved the godhood that she feels she's really like worked herself up to. And so that's where I think we see this development with the new material and where she's kind of pushing this whole Daughters of Cain bit too, because while the Daughters of Cain are definitely a thing, I just don't think that's really, I think the warband that we're seeing now is the tip of the iceberg on the shadow elves, and I'm super excited about that.
That's what, you know, so, with the Deepkin, we saw the Deepkin, and I thought like that these are the new high elves, you know,
yeah,
that's what's up, these are the new high elves,
right.
But turns out we got the Lumineth Realm Lords coming.
The Lumineth, right? Yeah, yep, exactly.
And then now, you know, we got the Daughters of Cain, but nope. And we got these whatever. I don't know if they have a specific name or whatever, but they, I mean, they're playing into that shadow bit huge. Like they are
heavily,
mystical,
heavily.
And magical, amazing.
Well, so I used to read these old world books, and it was kind of like the Dirty Dozen kind of deal. You know, it was these last chancers almost, but of the old world. And, you know, they were essentially all under contract. They were all, and by contract, meaning if they didn't do what they were supposed to, they died through a magical curse. And they were all outlaws and stuff like that. And so they had to go behind the lines and go serve all this, you know, backwards political ends and things like that. Anyways, so they go to try and stop what they thought was like a Skaven deal down in this dungeon deal, and they end up finding out that in reality it was like this one dark elf who was trying to mess up the elves' guiding stones, which, you know, is a big thing with the Skaven, always trying to screw those things up and whatnot. But anyways, so it's just this one dark elf, and I tell you what, any one of those poses from some of those warbands just screamed kind of the aesthetic that was bespoken in this book on what the dark elves looked like. I really think they've done an amazing job capturing the new age of dark elves with those warband models.
When it's all said and done, how many elf factions do you think we will have? Because right now we already have two more than I thought we were gonna. I'm like, you're high elves, dark elves, what else? That was the
well,
the
we don't technically have what elves yet either.
We do not.
We got Sylvaneth, which I would have believed to have been the Wood Elves until we got that Warcry, the Shadespire, Warhammer Underworlds. I'll get to the right name eventually. and there's, you know, the Wanderers or whatever. So what do we got? We'll have the Wanderers. We'll have these Shadow Morphers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Lumineth Realm Lords.
Yep.
Deepkin. And so there's four. And then we'll have Daughters of Cain.
Daughters of Cain. Yep. And yeah, look, in all honesty, so when I break down the concepts for, I guess, the footprints of these, the high elves are obviously the high elves. But the high elves can be broken down in quite a few different subsets, which I think is what happens with the dark elves. So dark elves, they had the Daughters of Cain, which were broken out from the witch cults. They also had the Corsairs, which I believe is what the Deepkin became, because they're the piratey ones, and now they've got the sea piratey elves. So what if they did the same thing? So now we're going to get essentially what would be like the Blackguard executioner-esque dark elves. What if they did that for the Realm Lords? You had like the super high elves, like, yep, as in like the dragon knights. What are they called?
Dragon princes. Yep.
Dragon princes. You also had the white lions.
White lions and the Phoenix Guard. Yep. And
the shades.
The Phoenix Guard. Yep. There's still a lot of meat on that bone if they wanted to plumb the depths of those factions. You could still write yourself four or five different elf factions if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think the Realm Lords are primed to, because they're the earth element right now. You know, there's four other elements in there.
Well, yeah, technically they can't form Captain Planet yet, so they do need to fill it out a bit more.
Yeah, I got technically five elements. Heart, you're right. I was right the first time.
that was the whole premise of the joke, was to get to
the heart. Captain Planet. Good try.
Oh, so that, I mean, the preview, yeah, that's... It's not bad. I mean, they marketed it as different stuff, not just 40K, and that's what we got. But we still got the veil pulled back on that Necron Deathmark, Hexmark.
The Hexmark Destroyer.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah,
he looks sick.
He does.
I thought we were going to see, I did think we were going to see one or two more Necron pieces. But nah, I'm definitely disappointed with what we got there. The guy looks awesome.
Yeah, we'll get. So, what do we know? We have coming down the pipe for Necrons. We know that there's probably going to be more info to have about the Monolith, the Silent King, the Void Dragon.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. The
Destroyers. Did I say Destroyers already?
Yeah, they've done a pretty good job of demonstrating, I think, about what they're going to as far as the Destroyers, the new floating Destroyers. They've shown both their weapon profiles. We haven't necessarily seen rules. I just don't know what, you know. We know they're going to have the typical stuff, but what else are they going to have that's something else?
Well, I mean, we were 20%, 30% right, from what I remember.
Pretty good.
None of us were going to be, I don't think any of us are qualified to speculate properly on like Warcry. And we can wax lyrical on it and the storylines and things. I think we all kind of keep our finger on the pulse, but predicting those things is beyond my skill set. I can't predict what's going
to
come up.
Well, anytime this stuff comes up, I mean, you know, sometimes we go from logic to wish listing. But I think that's okay. Everyone should do that. Because we fantasize about this stuff all the time. So, you know, whatever.
Mm. I would like to say for the two game systems that we play the most, e.g. probably 30K, 40K, we got those right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks for joining me. I mean, I know it's the middle of your night, Adam, and Red right in the middle of your morning.
Glad to be here.
It is 1:40 in the morning.
Nice.
Well, y'all have a great rest, y'alls, whatever it is, and we'll talk again next week.
All right. See you guys.
You can't handle the truth.